My name is Aliyamama Rashid. I'm a painter and a storyteller based in Kuwait City.
I'm Michelle Shifaletti, and you're listening to Thaqafat.
Aliyamama Rashid Al-Awadi is a Kuwaiti visual artist who investigates the discourse of her own body as a Muslima cyborg, fluctuating between the East and West. The Muslima cyborg rests in a liminal spectacle that compartmentalizes the collective tangibility of the mind, body, and the ornament. Aliyamama received her MFA in Fine Arts at Parsons School of Design in 2019 and her BFA in Fine Arts at the School of Visual Arts in New York in 2016. She has participated in various exhibitions in New York City, including the Czech Center, Parcel Projects, and the New School. She was a recipient of the Master's Scholarship and the Merit Scholarship Program by the Kuwait Ministry of Higher Education. She was also a fellow at the Professional Development Initiative Program, sponsored by the National U.S. Arab Chamber of Commerce, Kuwait Ministry of High Education, and the Embassy of Kuwait, and the Kuwait Foundation for the Advancement of Science. Aliyamama's work has been published in Harper's Bazaar Arabia, Vogue Arabia, The Visionary Project, and in 7 Days, Expanded Edition by AC Books. Hi, Aliyamama. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to Thaqafat.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be on this platform, and I'm very humbled as well to, speaking to you. I don't want to say interviewed. So yeah, it's a pleasure.
The pleasure is mine. So let's get started. Tell our listeners a little bit about who you are.
So my name is Aliyamama Rashid. I'm a painter based in Kuwait. I've been in New York for 7 years and I've moved back to Kuwait for the past 2 years. And I've been painting, writing, researching, and just, you know, living my life, I want to say, within the studio and outside of it in Kuwait.
Okay, so you're talking to me right now from your beautiful studio. So before we kind of get into your work in a little bit more depth, share with us a little bit about your studio and the process that you have kind of in your beautiful space.
In regards of like my process and in regards of my space, it's all very organic and it's free flowing. And it's as well, I want to say, like, coated with one intention, which is simply like showing up to my studio and wanting to tell a story. So that's why I always introduce myself as a painter and a storyteller as well. So it's an accumulation of many stories deriving from sensations, memories, my presence, what I witness within my everyday life. And it's all leaked within the studio. And it's leaked not only within the work, within the canvases and the paperworks and in general, the studio space, but also I want to say like within the energy of the space as well. So basically, like, you have, I want to say, my thought documentation happening, you know, all over the space visually and in regards of the space itself. So visually, you see leakages all over my floor, on the walls, even a little bit on the ceiling. And I can tell where each kind of leakage comes from and where, like, it connects to. And then in regards of that, it's just the place as well where I also like write, where I have my studio visits. I have my parents as well, like, sitting with me as I paint sometimes, or just have coffee, you know, with friends over here. So it's a space not only for myself and for my own kind of research and work, but I always say it's a space for all. And that's how I activate this space even further, beyond my presence.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about, you mentioned you're a storyteller. Was that something that you kind of had intrinsically in you from a young age? Is this something that you developed? What is your process kind of storytelling, and where did that really begin?
I think the act of storytelling itself, it stemmed outside of myself, really, ever since I was young. And that was through my dad. So, as I was growing up, my dad used to like improvise and create these stories. They were like funny stories based on, like, you know, I want to say like folk tale, or like just even his sense of humor. And after, you know, school, basically in the late afternoon, we would like go and like sit down in the living room, and he would tell me these funny stories, and he would illustrate them sometimes as well. And then he also like enriched me with this discipline of kind of like going to a library and purchasing a book as well every weekend, basically, or the start of a weekend after school. So I kind of grew up with this idea that I wanted to, I want to say like I was seeking actually for like a sense of renewal. And I was curious, and that was all, I think, due to my dad and kind of what he embedded within me. And then I think that was heightened even more because I feel like growing up as well, while I was like in high school, I was very shy, introverted. I didn't speak much really. All I did was like paint and draw. I was kind of the silent kid. But I had so much charged, I want to say, energy within me, but I didn't know how to speak about it. I felt like I didn't fit in. And then when I like applied to school and went to New York and kind of as well went into, I want to say, like art school specifically, not just the city itself, it forces you to be personal. Mm-hmm. And it forces you to kind of present yourself. And in presenting yourself and in presenting a certain work or a certain idea, you kind of have to talk about it as if it's a story, really. So I was subconsciously, I want to say, connecting that way of storytelling with the way my dad used to as well, like, say these stories, or like how he would as well hold the dialogue and all. So it became kind of like a discipline within me. And then it got sharpened even more critically and conceptually, like in grad school, I want to say. And as well, I want to say, just through personal, I want to say, traumas that I've experienced in New York as well in regards to racism and kind of just being, I want to say, like a Muslim artist really in New York.
Let's talk more about New York, because you did your undergraduate and graduate school there. What was the experience like for you, not only living in New York and not only in terms of kind of your artistic practice, going to schools that specialize in fine arts, kind of, and visual arts? What was that experience like for you on your work? And then also kind of personally, living in a place so far from home?
So in regards of like the academic, again, like in regards of like education as well, like art education in Kuwait, like it wasn't in depth, or it wasn't something that was embedded heavily, I want to say, within the culture itself, within my own culture and country, even though we have a rich and a deep history. But like we kind of lost that in a way. We lost the system. We didn't lose the history. And then in school as well, while I was in high school and all, like we had limited courses. And I remember I took all of them, from like ceramics to art history to like AP arts and all. But like in regards of like formulating, I want to say, kind of your own narrative or kind of your own interest and embedding your different disciplines into one, like that wasn't taught. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I went and I started my bachelor in the School of Visual Arts, that was in 2012. It was, again, it was a tough experience because first of all, I never lived on my own ever. And then like the other factor is like, again, entering into a Western art system. So like one of my first classes, I'll never forget that, a drawing class. Entering into the first drawing class and like seeing a nude model in the middle of the room, you know, I was like, oh my God, like I was in shock and kind of scared as well, you know, because I didn't, you know, understand this kind of, I want to say, not even system, but this level, I want to say, of like art education as well. And it was uncensored, of course. So I had to break these boundaries, from like censorship boundaries to as well personal boundaries, for example, which is like, again, like showing up and like kind of speaking about yourself and being very personal and opening your vulnerability even more. So I was ridding myself in my bachelor of my self-censorship, but not even completely. Because by the end as well, like in my final year, I kind of arrived into this interest of, you know, drawing or like painting figures, but I was still within my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Like I wouldn't call these figures as myself. I would call them like a general term, like just like figures or like genderless beings, but I was talking about myself and I didn't realize that. So like between basically my bachelor and my master, that was the year I want to say where I kind of like found my urgency, and as well have been through kind of like a series of like, I want to say like trauma in regards of like working in hostile work environments, within like galleries, and kind of being dealing with different like racist remarks and kind of different racist as well treatments. And I would go through them on a daily basis. And I was depressed during that time. And I, you know, I was trying to gather myself up. And, you know, I didn't process that even. And I never really have, you know, encountered a racist encounter beforehand, you know. So, and a lot of questions kind of came up. How do I articulate that? What am I outside of my culture? Where do I situate myself outside of my comfort zone, outside of my, and as well as a woman and as a Muslima and as a hijabi. So I was tackling three things. And then when I went into grad school, that was the first time after this year, that was the first time where I felt like home. I found my home in the city again. And I felt like I was in a safe space. And I went to Parsons School of Design, the MFA Fine Arts program. And I found myself ridding myself of this self-censorship and kind of talking about what I've been through in the previous year, randomly, as we were introducing ourselves for the first time in a critical thinking class. I was just speaking about my previous work, and I started like blabbing out, I want to say, what I've been through. And, you know, I didn't even realize what I was saying, but just came out of me. And it was kind of my first time where I spoke about my, I want to say, multiple like traumas that I've been through. And from there, the healing journey kind of started. And I felt like I was being caressed again by hope, you know, because I lost hope, I remember, during that year before grad school. My master's as well, like during that program, like I, again, like not only knew how to articulate myself, like as a woman artist and as a Muslima artist and as a hijabi, but as well, what do I want to paint about? Or do I want to paint? So I spent my entire first semester not doing one single work. I was just researching. And then suddenly, the second semester, I visited Kuwait for like 3 weeks. And I came back and I birthed my first painting, influenced by the external, but the external that derives from Kuwait, from the everyday life or the everyday encounterings of Kuwait. And I think New York City as well gave me that kind of weapon as well, which is the discipline of looking at your surroundings. You'd walk down the same street, you know, every day I'd walk down, you know, off Delancey Street, going to my coffee shop to work on like my thesis. But every time I walked down that street, I'd see something else. And I think that kind of, you know, these kind of encounterings really tweak that interest of like looking and gazing into the everyday and letting these objects find you, really, rather than you finding them.
You talk about kind of like finding yourself and finding your voice in art, but also like personally, I kind of, you know, we're always thinking, who are we, right? Who are we really like as people? But I think it's interesting because you talk about finding yourself in some capacity away from home. Mm-hmm. How did your search for yourself in a place away from home kind of impact your own self-awareness?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a beautiful question. And, you know, it's something that we kind of really figure out all of our lives, really. That's what I believe in. And you get to kind of renew it from time to time. But I want to say that kind of my sense of identity was kind of placed upon me before I went to New York, really. And I think that's partly as well because of like the first of all, like I was, again, I was very introverted, very shy, very independent upon myself growing up in general. And I enjoyed my solitude, you know, I think while growing up. And I think also part of it as well was the hijab as well. But the hijab as like a decision, it was the first major decision that I've made in my life when I was only like 14 years old. And it just came upon me and I wanted to do it. And the reason why I wanted to do it in such a young age as well. I just love the conception of it, as if it's like a kind of like this way of like, I want to say, not only protecting myself, but also it was kind of a way of like choosing consciously what I want to reveal about myself physically and what I want to kind of keep to myself. That's how I saw it in a way, rather than something that was spiritual. So when I went to, for example, like New York, not only did I have to like articulate myself in a completely new city, being in an art school and all, but also like adding on to kind of the meaning of what this decision that I made when I was 14 years old means to me today. I remember during my first like months in the city, during like weekends, I'd go on walks and I'd walk like from, I want to say, the Lower East Side up until like the upper like West Side, and just go into like bookstores. And I remember seeing like sections of like Islamic spirituality. And I remember that blew my mind. And I found so many books that I wasn't exposed to back in Kuwait, like finding out about like Rumi, Ibn al-Arabi, Sahrawardi, Mansur al-Hallaj, for example, all of these kind of as well Sufi poets, I want to say, or kind of these philosophers that were influenced by Sufism and Islam. And I didn't know about Sufism before, so I was very kind of fascinated by that, and fascinated by this openness and this, I want to say, this technology of spirituality. And I remember that automatically tweaked not only kind of my sense of solitude in relation to kind of my faith and my spirituality, but also kind of, you know, solidified my sense of curiosity as well.
Let's talk a little bit more about your work. I want to talk about a lot of the concept of your work, which is this concept of the Muslima cyborg. Can you share a little bit about kind of how you came up with this concept and what it represents to you personally as an artist?
I always start off by defining what I mean by cyborg. Cyborg is usually like a connotation towards the technological, the robotic, the mechanical. However, the reason why I wanted to kind of like reintroduce this term in my sense and calling it the Muslim cyborg really is like not through the artificial, the technological or the mechanical, but through like the technology of spirituality. So through spiritual intelligence. And this term kind of derived again from this fascination or this astonishment, I want to say, of finding out about, you know, multiple Muslim scholars in the past, you know, such as, for example, I keep mentioning Ibn al-Arabi. He's one of my favorite philosophers. And reading about Ibn Khaldun, for example. So what I was doing is I was rereading these texts and rereading their writings and their philosophies, and I wanted to kind of introduce them in a contemporary manner. And I felt that I was doing that initially, not only with my spirituality, but with just how I view myself as a human being living on this earth. And kind of how I see as well myself transcending the traumas that I've been through and kind of reclaiming my womanhood, I want to say. Discovery started with my major like trauma, which is like having my hijab like removed from my head by like a white man in like Manhattan. And it was like during the Trump elections as well. So it was like a very charged time. And after, you know, encountering that and having kind of my decision or like my symbology kind of removed from me for in a matter of seconds, that shattered me and that took away my sense of freedom. But then again, it solidified, you know, kind of what, you know, again, my intent with my symbology that I wear every single day. And as well with how do I want to represent it? And it made me as well think again of how many bodies do I attain really as a woman, as a Muslima, hijabi kind of woman. And I remember I, you know, started to have this question kind of like simmer in my head. And because it was in my head all the time, I one time had like to pray basically like all of my prayers in a single day. And because I was like working in the studio, and by like the Isha prayer, which is like the last prayer of the day, at that point, like I sat in my thobe, which is like the prayer garment that a woman wears during prayer, And I suddenly like got this, I want to say, sensation and this charged question of, you know, basically like, is the thobe a second skin, or is it the third skin, or is it my first skin, basically? And you feel kind of, again, the barrier between the fabric of the thobe and then your fleshed body. From that sensation, this is where I came up with the idea of like the third body. So what I do on canvas is like a combination of both. It's like a combination of the flesh body and the thobe body. And the third body basically is the Muslim cyborg. And then kind of distorting that process with objects that I see in my everyday kind of life. And that kind of happened and was heightened even more when I moved back to Kuwait. You know, I'd see random objects such as like a shattered piece of glass that has like an Ottoman like flower painted on it underneath my car in the middle of like industrial Shuif. It's like an area in Kuwait where it's like filled with like factories and like it's filled with these workshops, and also to, for example, an ornamented dish just thrown in like the traditional souk, which is like souk lambarki. Yeah.
You, I mean, a lot of your work, it discusses, like, you're mentioning this idea of culture, society, religion, femininity. How do you, what's your process when you start on a canvas and you have these ideas? What are you trying to say to your viewer? Or while you're painting, are you discovering what you're kind of going to say?
I think it varies, actually. And the reason why I say that is that it varies in regards of like the image approach the canvas would or the paper would, basically. So sometimes I get a sensation. Sometimes it's like before I go to sleep or before I go to bed, I feel like there's this, sensation or this imagination of the image. For example, like one time I remember I had such a long day and I came and I, you know, went to sleep and I was like half asleep. And I remember feeling like my body was like floating. And I registered like this idea as I was half asleep of like what it would be like to kind of paint the body in motion or paint the body gradually falling into itself. And usually how I approach the canvas as well is kind of, I want to say, not only disrupts or contradicts this kind of sensation-based process or sensation-based kind of stage, but it's basically improvisation as well. So I depend so much on the medium as well. So usually like I stretch my canvases, I prep them and all myself, and then and I think, I believe in prepping the canvas itself. Again, it's you're instilling your energy in it and activates the canvas as this like 3D object rather than a 2D image. And then it's always, I always paint flatly. The canvas is on the floor. The first layer is always like painted flatly. And it's always loose. And it's very similar to watercolor. So the paint is so thinned out. And I would paint the figure. And sometimes, again, it comes from a specific sensation. Sometimes it's improvisation. Like I believe in starting with your intent. Yeah. And my intent is discovering as many liminal bodies as I can, not only within, I want to say, this formula that I came up with, but in general, within my everyday and within kind of my journey as well as like El Yamama. And I just take my time with building it. And again, with that as well, I depend so much on color. And even color, sometimes it's influenced externally. Sometimes it's imagined, sometimes it's external. By imagined, it's usually deriving again from the intangible, mm-hmm. I would say. So one question that I always ask myself, and these are where my figures are situated, which is, the space of liminality in Islam is barzakh. So it's a space in between basically earth and in between the afterlife. And that's the space kind of that I want to discover, not only for my figures and for myself, but even spatially. And in a way where I'm also envisioning its color. So what's the color of barzakh, basically? That's what I keep asking myself. And I always see it in a loose manner and then thickening it up gradually with the canvas. Sometimes it's dark, like the painting behind me. Sometimes it's like loose, like this work in progress basically here. And then with the figures themselves, sometimes they're external. Like the other day I was driving in our neighborhood and there's a school next to us. It's like a kindergarten and the gate of the school is like this beautiful, like cerulean blue. And I was like, I want to paint this and I want to include it in my Thobed figure, you know? So sometimes it's like a color that I would see in the middle of my everyday, you know? So that's usually, I want to say, how I start my process. It's like partly like the intent of starting it and the intent of the conceptual is always there. But in terms of execution, I like the element of surprise and that's my way of play, I want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, so I read your artist statement and I picked out a line that I thought was so interesting because I feel like it really embodies kind of what you're trying to convey. And it's the Muslim cyborg transcends territory through its urgency to decontextualize cultural traditions that have been mistaken for religious acquirements. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Because I think this is, first of all, I think your whole artist statement is very interesting. I've read a lot of artist statements and this line really, really kind of stuck out to me as something that was made me kind of pause in the reading and say, okay. So I wanted to ask you if you could kind of share a little bit more about kind of that specific element of your work and that line that you wrote about.
Yeah, thank you for asking this question. It's making me very happy, actually. You know, I think as well with specifically, again, challenging these, I want to say like cultural connotations, mistranslating them into kind of these religious, strict religious kind of, I want to say, ideas. So that really stems from many things. One is that like the Thobe, for example. So, you know, again, growing up, you know, it's like you'd see a Thobe. It's usually floral. It's like it has, you know, pastel colors at times. Sometimes it's just ornamented from like underneath, like in the neck area, basically. Or, you know, it's basically very muted. So it's an airy fabric and the patterning is usually floral. But why is that kind of the norm? And why is that? Like, I questioned that. I was like, what, it can't be a religious law to only wear like a floral thobe, you know. But it's like it's embedded and kind of wired within us. And the lines between religion and culture are like blurred, you know. And then there comes this other idea or like this other challenge, I want to say, basically, of, again, kind of like perceiving this object, I want to say, as this object, not only like beyond the idea that I kind of have to cover myself during prayer, but it's an act of staging as well, staging your spiritual self. So can we, I would, you know, always ask, you know, whoever I'm talking to about the subject, especially with like women, basically, is that like, can you, for example, like challenge yourself and ask, for example, why do you wear the thobe, you know, beyond the kind of religious law of like, you know, having to cover like certain parts of your body and all. But for example, you know, a lot of women as well question, they're like, okay, like, why do I, if I'm not wearing like a hijab like all day or whatever, or I'm not covering myself all day and, you know, Allah made me, why do I have to cover myself when I, you know, things like that. And people are scared to question these things. And I'm like, let's have a dialogue about that, really. Like there isn't an answer. It comes upon, I want to say, again, beyond, let's think beyond law for a second, Islamic law. But to me, for example, if you ask me, why do you wear the thobe? I wear it because it's an act of like staging. So I'm like entering into the rectangle of the prayer rug, into a new typology that maybe takes me out of earth, really. And that's kind of my outtake on it. So when I mentioned that sentence, like the thobe is just like one aspect. For example, what about, you know, again, like different aspects, for example, such as like, again, from, you know, small things, like even, for example, my figures sometimes have red nail polish on them. And it's like I'm questioning or like teasing the idea, you know, some women believe that they're like, oh, when you pray, you can't have nail polish on. And others are like, oh, no, you can. It's fine as long as it's like breathable nail polish. You know, that's so funny to me. And that's my sense of humor as well, I want to say, with the work. And it's usually hidden. And I don't like to talk about it or like reveal it, not because of censorship or anything, but I kind of like to give the viewer that kind of mystery.
And challenging, what are the norms? Why are these norms?
Exactly,
right?
That's the thing. And that's the nature of the human being. You're supposed to, you know, think. You have a mind, you have a heart, you know, you are activated. You are an entire sensory system that is able to articulate and absorb so many things. So of course you have to question. And that doesn't, you know, belittle anything about yourself. And again, if you feel that fear kind of upon yourself, that means that, you know, you're not maybe secure within your kind of belief or within your faith, you know.
So you're kind of talking about things that are very much against the grain. So what are people's reactions within your own, you know, not even within a large community, within your own, you know, small community or the artist community? How have people reacted to, you know, you challenging these norms in a very thoughtful way?
I think in general, with this dialogue, I want to say this blur between culture and religion, most, I want to say within my circle, I want to say within my friends, within, you know, my acquaintances, family members, we talk about this, you know, and again, we challenge each other. And sometimes you can sense that fear from this other person, but you challenge them not in a way where you're interrogating. There's a difference between kind of challenging and interrogation. It's like, also, I think, you know, I want to say like disrupt even my train of thought is that like, we have to learn to, you know, agree to disagree, basically, this discipline of like not taking it personally as well. Like, let's just have a dialogue. You know, I'm not aiming to threaten you or, you know, threatening your, you know, belief system. We can have different morals. We can have different ethics, but let's sit down and talk to each other. And a lot of people can't get to that stage. And yet there's an immense amount of openness within conversations, I think, within private conversations. It's just that people fear this general fear of judgment, I want to say, or, you know, have this fear of being perceived in a certain way or not. And again, I think, you know, how do we kind of, again, have more of these dialogues? It's simply like treating this dialogue and treating with this conversation, not only in a way that's like simply just loving, but in a way that's welcoming and in a way where it's like, I'm here to listen before I judge. Mm. And that's so important to learn, you know? And I think, again, I don't want to say that this was something that I completely like learned from like New York, or it's something I think my parents have instilled within me. The discipline of, again, like, trying your best to not like judge or prejudge and giving someone a chance and giving them a chance to say their story.
Half of it is being able to walk into the conversation with both parties being okay that it's okay to disagree, which is sometimes the hardest part. Is people come into a conversation, they want to change your mind or they want to tell you, okay, this is the right way to do something. But there's multiple right ways to do something. I think that's a very important thing that you're saying. I want to ask you, you have an upcoming show in Dubai. Share a little bit about kind of what you're looking forward to most as you kind of continue on your journey.
Yeah, so I'm excited actually to announce that I'll be having a solo show in Dubai in Tabari Art Space. And I'm working with Maliha Tabari, the gallery owner. She's amazing and can't ask for a better support, honestly. What I'm excited about with this show actually is that it's going to not only, I want to say, like intertwine and first of all, like showcase my paintings publicly in a physical space for the first time, because I've done it in a virtual manner through BAWA, but also like it intertwines, I want to say, the personal, again, aspect within my work, but like through my writing practice as well. So I do write about my work. I do, you know, have this kind of, I want to say, split between like the poetic and between the theoretical. And I'm kind of showcasing that through like not only having it, you know, like printed like onto a press release, it's not that, but actually like having it like printed on the wall. So it's like interacting with the pieces. And I'm excited to kind of showcase that because I never like showcase my writing with my practice in a direct manner. I've done that in micro ways in the past with certain works, but it's kind of like the first time where I feel like it's interacting vividly like with the paintings in a visual manner rather than just, you know, in a, I want to say, linguistic or kind of like in a traditional written manner. So, yeah.
Well, congratulations. We're looking forward to that. I want to ask you our last question, and that's, what does culture mean to you?
So to me, I think I really thought a lot about this question. And I think it came down to one meaning, really. I think culture is like an accumulation of fluctuant energies, regardless of, you know, whether they're subconscious or conscious. I think, and by this accumulation, I mean it's by us kind of being in union with one another as not only human beings, but again, activating our surroundings as beings as well. From this found object that you might find in your everyday, you know, to intangible sensations. These are all beings and these are all masses and we all come together. And this is what culture is. And culture is about sharing that with one another and sharing these findings with one another. So yeah.
Aliyah Mama, you have a very beautiful energy and I really enjoyed speaking with you today. So thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you so much. And likewise, and I'm humbled to be on this platform and I hope, you know, the listeners or the viewers would, you know, take away something and kind of, you know, put it or instill it within their day.
Thank you everyone for joining us. I hope that you enjoyed this episode with Aliyah Mama. Her work is super interesting and I hope you have a chance to check it out. You can visit her Instagram at AA Canvas, or you can visit her website at aliyahmamarashid.com to see more of her latest works. Until next time, when we continue to connect to the culture, Masarama.